Hey guys, Bill here. Before we get started with the AFC West preview podcast today, we've had some luck over the course of this preseason in terms of recording these podcasts and not having players get injured in between the time we record them and the time that we release them. That luck ran out this weekend. Both of our podcasts were affected by injuries to players at key positions. Today, as we do the AFC West podcast, keep in mind that we recorded it last week before the third set of preseason games. And of course, if you're a fantasy football owner, you know that Spencer Ware suffered a serious injury, appears to be out for the season for the Chiefs. I don't think it impacts things all that much. They drafted Kareem Hunt, who appears to be well set to take over as the primary running back, a little more Charcandrick West out there, but I don't think it's going to make too much of a difference. In addition, the Chiefs traded for Reggie Ragland, who figures to be in the rotation inside linebacker, probably later on in the season. It's going to take him a little bit of time to get used to the scheme there, but does help the Chiefs a tiny bit. They gave up a fourth-round pick in the future for him. So shouldn't affect things all that much in terms of projecting how the Chiefs are going to play going forward, but just in case you hear it and say, that sounds strange, just know that we recorded it late last week before the third set of preseason games. So I think Paxton Lynch is the only other guy who's affected, but talk about Paxton Lynch more as a long-term decision for the Broncos as opposed to a short-term solution. So just keep that in mind going forward for the show. Should be great. Thanks so much for listening, and more Bill Barnwell show coming later on this week. Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm here today to preview the AFC West. Two divisions left to go. This is one of them. And I am joined, first-time guest on the show, with someone I've meant to have on for various topics for a long time, actually, is USA Today's Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited to be here. So what, like long-time listener, first-time caller?
First-time caller.
This is very exciting.
Well, now you're stuck on the call for about an hour, so I hope that it's everything you've hoped for in the hour to come, because it may not be. We have an entire division to get to. However, let's start with the team that you covered locally, that you live in the same area as, that you are, I believe, at practice for a fair amount, the Denver Broncos, who are in a really interesting spot this offseason.
Sure, yeah, let's dive right into the Broncos and the mess that is their offense, I guess. I mean, maybe not. Maybe it won't be a mess. Maybe it'll be better. But it's certainly been an interesting offseason with all of the yet another year of quarterback drama going on in Denver. It seems to be the only kind that they have every year.
What they do best. And it seems like it's something that it seems like it's not going the way perhaps that the Broncos expected, where it, at this point, at least, ahead of the we're recording this just ahead of the third preseason game. It looks like Trevor Siemian has pretty much won the job. Paxton Lynch, it's weird because I remember reading before the second preseason game, there were reports that Paxton Lynch basically, you know, he was showing real signs of improvement, and then he struggled so much during the second game that it seems to have been Siemian's job by default. Is that fair, or is there more to it perhaps than what I'm making it out?
Yeah, I think there's more a little more to it than that. I think that the second preseason game last week in San Francisco was really Paxton Lynch's last shot to kind of make a case to extend the competition. I think that going into that second preseason game, there were two options. One, Trevor Siemian was going to win that job outright in that game, or Paxton Lynch would show enough that Vance Joseph had no choice but to extend this competition another week. I don't think there was any way that Paxton Lynch was going to go out and win the job in San Francisco, because Trevor has just he was the better quarterback all offseason, all through the preseason, in training camp. You know, I think you could look at it where they were splitting reps equally through practice. You know, basically every other day, one of the different quarterbacks got to go with the ones, and then sometimes they would change it within practice too. That you know, on Monday, Trevor Siemian would get to go with the ones and seven on sevens, but then he'd go with the twos and full team drills, and then they'd flop it. You know, so you could look at it. You know, you score each day like it's a boxing match, and okay, Trevor got this day, Siemian got the next day, but I think if you looked at everything as a whole, Trevor Siemian was always ahead. And you could make the argument that maybe this shouldn't have been an open competition. I mean, how many guys who've, you know, won, he won eight games as a starting quarterback last year. How many guys win eight games as a starter and then have to go into an open competition the next year? That very rarely happens. So I think, you know, I think it was a little bit more Trevor Siemian just holding on and winning this job rather than Paxton Lynch losing it. But I don't think that's the narrative that we're going to hear as much, just because of what the Broncos and John Elway had invested in getting Paxton Lynch last year in the draft, that there's an expectation that because he's a first-round pick, this guy needs to play, he needs to play sooner, and that he should be further along in his development right now than he is.
Interesting. So, I mean, given, like you said, he was a first-round pick, they traded up to grab him ahead of the Cowboys, which opens up a whole other can of worms, given what happened with the Cowboys and how they ended up getting Dak Prescott, who looks to be the better quarterback, at least at this point. What do you think the time frame is for Lynch where LA and the Broncos will actually be seriously concerned and say, okay, well, maybe we have the wrong guy here?
Yeah, I mean, it makes things very interesting long-term for the Broncos, because this competition is over. Vance Joseph has said Trevor Siemian is our guy. This is a permanent decision, barring some sort of injury that could happen to Trevor Siemian at some point this year. And that did happen last year. He missed two games because of a shoulder injury, had to have surgery in the offseason. Right. So it's certainly a possibility, but barring injury, this is going to be Trevor Simeon's job. We're not going to be on a week-to-week thing here where, let's say, Trevor Siemian goes out and throws two interceptions Monday night game week one, but they're not opening this back up. They're going to let Trevor be the guy, build this offense around him, let him be the leader in the huddle, in the locker room, all that stuff. So that does open up a lot of really interesting long-term questions for the Broncos at quarterback, because do you keep building around Trevor Siemian? Do you want to renegotiate with him after this year on a contract extension? That doesn't really seem to be something that John Elway is going to really want to do, unless all of a sudden Trevor Siemian becomes a legit Pro Bowler, really lights it up, has a great year. I mean, that would be a good problem to have, is if you have a really good starter and a guy that you drafted. But it's going to be very, do you go and do you open this up next year if Trevor has a decent year? Let's say he wins 8 or 9 games again. Can you open it up and let Paxton Lynch get back into this competition next year? I don't know what the answer to that question is, because, Paxton Lynch, they keep saying what's holding him back. Holding him back is his inexperience, that he hasn't had enough game reps to, learn the timing of the game and let his kind of brain catch up to his arm and all of those sorts of things. And you're not going to get that if you're not getting reps with the ones in practice, which he's not going to get anymore. If you're not playing in games, which, barring an injury, isn't going to happen. So I don't know what the long-term answer is for the Broncos, but I don't think this is settled. I don't think, because, Vance Joseph picked Trevor Siemian today, that we're not going to be having these sort of same conversations come, April through August of next year, no matter how the quarterbacks play.
Yeah, and it seems like, it seems a little bit unfair, and it seems like it may create some concern in terms of just having credibility within the locker room if you are sort of forcing Trevor Siemian to repeatedly win the job he's been winning the entire time. Like, I think at some point, if you're a player, you're watching this and you're saying, okay, well, this guy's better. He's been playing better, every moment we've had him, we've had him on the field. So why does he keep needing to win his job versus just having won the job and having it be a final thing?
Yeah, because it's a weird thing, because LA, and while Vance Joseph and previously Gary Kubiak and John Fox before him, really had the decision to, who actually plays. Yeah. But throughout Elway's tenure as GM, he's earned a really good reputation around the rest of the locker room about the best guys will play. It doesn't matter where we drafted him, where we signed him, how much signing bonus he got. And I think there's a couple players on that roster that are really testaments to that. Chris Harris Jr., the cornerback, is number one. I mean, he was an undrafted guy who got the smallest signing bonus out of his entire undrafted rookie class back in 2011. And now he's an All-Pro. He earned playing time by the middle of his rookie year. C.J. Anderson is another guy who came in and beat out draft picks and then ultimately got himself played. He beat out Monte Ball, beat out Ronnie Hillman eventually. And, so there are examples of kind of this being a meritocracy. Yeah, quarterback is always going to be different, and John Elway as a quarterback, I think, is always going to look at it a little bit differently. And, while Elway gets a lot of credit, deservedly so, for what he's done for the Broncos as a general manager, the type of roster he's built, obviously getting to a Super Bowl, building that type of, or getting to two Super Bowls, winning one, building that sort of defense through free agency and the draft, the one big knock on him, I think, as a GM, and I'm sure it bugs him, the type of competitor that he is and the type of player that he was as a quarterback, I'm sure it bothers him that he has yet to draft a successful starting quarterback. I'm sure this is something that is going to bug him until he gets it right. And at what point does he put in, you know, does his input matter more than what the coaches are seeing every day in practice?
Do you think that that is a real factor? I mean, do you think that LA is sort of helping make that decision? Or how much of this do you think he's really turning over to Joseph and Mike McCoy and the coaching staff versus, you know, having his own sort of input into who plays and who doesn't play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that Trevor Siemian won this job shows that the coaching staff had a very big say in this, because mm-hmm. it was really obvious watching practice after practice after practice, and especially the first two preseason games, that really the only choice here was Trevor Siemian to be your starting quarterback. If you know, they're not in a rebuilding development, like we can take time to develop a quarterback throughout the season kind of mode. They believe that they're a team that should be competing for the AFC West, mm-hmm. if not for the AFC Championship this year. And they can't do that with a guy who's going to be so wildly inconsistent and shows a lot of times that he's just not ready to play, which is what we've seen out of Paxton Lynch. So the fact that that Trevor Siemian did win this job tells me that Vance Joseph and Mike McCoy and Bill Musgrave, that their voices were very loud in that room in making this decision. And, you know, I think that's a good sign mm-hmm. moving forward, that they're going to play the best guys regardless of, you know, when and where he was drafted.
Yeah, and I think regardless of who ends up playing quarterback, it seems like it's going to be Siemian, of course. But if he gets hurt, it would be Lynch. And, you know, whoever's playing back there, it seems like they're going to have a better shot at succeeding this year, given how bad the offensive line was and how inconsistent it was for stretches of last season, and how much the Broncos have invested in improving that offensive line, both in terms of the starters and then pushing the guys who were starters back to be depth players in reserve over the last few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's been probably the most dramatic difference offensively that we've seen. I mean, it was no secret what their free agent plan was, what their mm-hmm. draft plan was. It was fixing this offensive line. I mean, the two guys they went out and got in free agency, guard Ron Leary, tackle Menelik Watson, mm-hmm. Kind of guys who were known as being big, physical, mean type of players. And, you know, you never want to accuse offensive linemen, especially of any position group, of being soft. But I think that was something that you probably could have said at times about the Broncos offensive line last year. Mm-hmm. They weren't a mean group. They weren't nasty. They were getting pushed around a lot by probably weaker teams. But third and one for the 2016 Broncos was the worst down I've ever seen. I mean, you may as well have just punted on third mm-hmm. and one. I mean, their success rate on third and one was atrocious. So, you know, in a lot of that has to all be offensive line, right? If you can't pick up 1 yard consistently, it was really bad. So it was clear mm-hmm. what their plan was. We're going to get bigger. We're going to get nastier up front. And they used their first round pick on Garrett Bowles, left tackle from Utah. And I remember there was a lot of grumbling around Denver when they made that pick, which was weird because all signs all spring pointed to this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, Elway didn't stand up there a couple of days before the draft and said, hey, look, this is the guy we're taking. But it was so clear that they were drafting left tackles that when people got upset that was what they did, it was kind of baffling to me because it was such a glaring hole that they needed a left tackle. And they went and took the one that they thought was best. And he's probably been the most impressive, you know, one of the most impressive guys in the preseason, certainly of the rookies. Mm-hmm. He's had a really good camp. He had a rough game against San Francisco with penalties. But they think a lot of that are kind of, you know, the mental mistakes that a young guy is making. And then mm-hmm. a couple of them are some, you know, aggression type penalties too. And that's what his game is.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to work with him to learn where is that line of
realistically, that happens a lot with young offensive linemen. I think Taylor Wan had it with Tennessee a couple of years ago where it's, you know, you go through this draft process and you have coaches ask you, hey, are you nasty? Like, are you a guy who's going to, you know, basically be vicious? And you say, yeah, and then you go do it in camp and it's like, actually, no, don't do that anymore. So it's this weird double standard when it comes to offensive linemen, especially young offensive linemen.
Yeah, and you just have to learn to, you know, when are you enforcing your will, but when you're hurting your team and when you're getting multiple, you know, personal foul penalties or, you know, or even false starts or holds or whatever the penalty is and mm-hmm. you're hurting your team, that's when you have to dial it back a little. But they want to get them right up to that edge without crossing it. And that's a tough thing to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. To your point though, the Broncos last year, 63 plays on third and one or fourth and one more than anybody else in the league. And the league's lowest conversion rate, 34.9% on third and one.
I'm kind of surprised it was that high.
Yeah, it does. Watching them play a little bit, as someone who may have owned CJ Anderson in fantasy football for the early stretch of last season, I feel like I watched a lot of third and ones where I'm like, oh, this is going to work. Oh, no, it didn't work. Oh, that's unfortunate. But yeah, you figure the offense is going to be better, certainly with the improvements to the offensive line. Hopefully CJ Anderson's healthier, and they are a little better running the football. And then the concern, I guess, maybe is that the defense might slip given the departure of Wade Phillips.
Yeah, and that is certainly a concern because they were playing at such a high level, especially that pass defense. There have been a lot of injury concerns, depth concerns that we've seen going on in the preseason here, mm-hmm. Especially on their front seven, where we talked about what they did on the offensive line. Their defensive offseason plan was very obvious, too, and that was getting bigger and stouter, basically improving their run defense. They, you know, they signed Pecco from Cincinnati, yep. and Zach Kerr from Indianapolis, who are two really, really big dudes, mm-hmm. That, you know, they really just want to take up a lot of space in the middle of their defensive line. But they've had a lot of other injury concerns. Derek Wolfe, who is their best defensive end, he's the kind of the heart of that front seven. He's the yeah. tone setter for everything. I mean, if you want to talk about nasty, mean mm-hmm. guys, Derek Wolfe is probably, you know, top five in that category in the league right now, mm-hmm. and just in terms of guys that you don't want to face in the trenches. And he's missed a bunch of time this preseason with a sprained ankle. I expect that he'll be ready for week one because he plays through everything, yeah. basically. And so I would expect that he's going to get him do everything he can to be back week one. But, you know, he's missed a lot of time. Jared Crick, you know, another veteran defensive end, he's missed a bunch of time with back spasms, which mm-hmm. is always going to be a concern. Once your back starts flaring up when you're a veteran guy, it's really hard to get that kind of back on track. So yeah, the fact that those guys have missed time is really troubling.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, backs don't suddenly heal up and get better from the first moment they start hurting. It's not like you 6 months later, you're like, oh, wow, my back just stopped hurting. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, ask DeMarcus Ware. I mean, I yeah. think he probably felt like he could continue playing if it wasn't for his back, and his back was just never right last year mm-hmm. at all.
And we saw this with we saw this last year a little bit with Vance Walker going out during training camp, and that was kind yeah. of the first injury where the defensive line was beat up last year and ended up being the big weakness in the defense, where they were the best pass defense in football by a significant margin when it came to DVOA, but they were 21st against the run. They really were not a very strong run defense. So it does make sense that they did invest, you know, in improving that depth along the defensive line this year, but those guys are going to have to stay healthy. I mean, as good as the secondary is going to be, and there's no reason to think it's going to be anything but great, you know, those guys up front can't stay healthy. They're going to be allowing a lot of third and ones and fourth and ones on the other side of the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just the, you know, the run defense that's the question right now in the front seven. It's also their depth and health with their pass rush. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that Von Miller's going to be there. They basically put Von Miller in like a bubble wrap for the preseason. We're finally going to see him play a little bit in the game against Green Bay this weekend, but mm-hmm. they've been so careful with him because, you know, they saw Shaq Barrett get hurt while working out on his own during OTAs. Yeah. They saw Shane Ray get hurt the first week of training camp, had to have surgery on his wrist, and they're like, Von Miller is our entire pass rush right now. They don't have, I mean, really, until these guys get back, until Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett get back on the field, which mm-hmm. they're expecting is going to happen in September. But until that happens, it's really Von Miller. Yeah. And what else? And, you know, it was just 2 years ago that, you know, kind of the big question about the Denver pass rush was, oh, my gosh, they have too many pass rushers. And now it's like, oh, crap, they don't have any. And so that's going to be a big, big question because those guys on the back end are only going to be – I mean, they're still going to be really good. Those are great, great players. Mm-hmm. But if they're not, one, stopping the run, and if they're not getting the consistent pass rush – from not just Von Miller, but from somebody else opposite Von Miller, then it's really going to affect those other guys' ability to do what they do well.
Yeah, Von Miller, is as great as he is one guy.
Yeah, I mean, right now, a guy named Kasim Edebali is their starter opposite Von Miller right now.
That's troubling.
I mean, and that's where they are right now. Yeah, it's not an ideal situation. Yeah. By any means.
Is there a breakout player you would say who might, you know, kind of take a step forward or play a bigger role than people are expecting for the Broncos this year?
Yeah, I mean, I Garrett Bowles to me has been kind mm-hmm. of the most impressive guy in training camp. But I think a guy who's been really interesting, who's really popped in the preseason, is this rookie running back, D'Angelo Henderson. Mm-hmm. And technically he's buried on the depth chart, you know, behind CJ Anderson. We're finally going to get to see if Jamaal Charles has enough to make this team in the third preseason game. Mm-hmm. But they really, really like this kid, D'Angelo Henderson. I believe he's a sixth-round draft pick, but he's just shown this tremendous burst. And, you know, while C.J. Anderson he's lost some weight, he's very fit right now. I mean, he's kind of changed a lot of his body this offseason in hopes mm-hmm. of being able to play a full season for the first time in his career. You know, while C.J. Anderson seems to be in really good shape, he's not like a burst kind of guy. Right. And that's what we're seeing consistently out of this kid Henderson. And I think he's going to earn himself a decent amount of playing time. And, you know, C.J. Anderson, like we said, he's not been able to stay healthy consistently. You know, there's a lot of questions about Jamaal Charles. Devontae mm-hmm. Booker, their draft pick last year, he's been on PUP all of camp. He's yet to get it. I think he's going to be on their roster week one, but he hasn't done anything in the preseason. So that's really opened the door for D'Angelo Henderson to find himself on, not just onto the roster, but mm-hmm. probably into the game as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly an opportunity there. As good as C.J. Anderson was during the Super Bowl, during that playoff run, I mean, even in 2015, they weren't committed to him for a good chunk of the season. There was a lot of running Hillman until, you know, really late in the campaign. So I think it's more of an open job than maybe some people might be suggesting from the outside. I'm going to say the tight ends, and I'm not going to pick one because I don't know which one is going to actually end up playing a meaningful role. I mean, Virgil Green has been around for a while. You figure he's more of a blocking tight end. They did draft Jeff Hirman in the third round a couple of years ago. A.J. Derby was a guy they traded for from the Patriots last year who has some athletic upside. I mean, there are options there, but it would be nice if someone broke out as a sort of secondary target behind Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders who could help out as a tight end in the passing game. Mike McCoy, sorry.
Oh, for sure. Oh, I was just going to back up what you said about their tight ends. I mean, that's what's interesting about Mike McCoy coming back. And one of the things that Mike McCoy is offensive coordinator, one of the things they did this offseason was they went back through and they watched so much of the tight end tape from San Diego over the last couple of years. And what Hunter Henry and what Antonio Gates have done. And that got those tight ends really fired up because they said, it was like, okay, Mike McCoy knows we're here. He wants to go to us in the red zone. We're going to be an important part of this offense. And, you know, I think you could criticize some of the things that Mike McCoy has done from being an aggressive play caller standpoint. That's why I think people who are expecting that all of a sudden they're going to get unique and aggressive on third downs, third and shorts, maybe they're going to be disappointed. But he does really good things with the tight ends.
Yeah.
And I think they all looked at what Hunter Henry was able to do last year and got really excited. So, you know, if any of these guys, whether it's Green or A.J. Derby or Hireman, who has not really lived up to his draft position yet because of some injury issues. If they could even have half of the success that Hunter Henry had last year, I think that would be a significant improvement for that group.
Yeah, for sure. I will say, and this may be disappointing to Broncos fans, I am pretty skeptical of the Broncos this year. I just see the defense maybe taking a step backwards and the offense getting a little better, but maybe not overcoming that gap. They're also playing, according to the Football Power Index, the toughest schedule in all of football, which can't help matters. I'm going to say they go 7-9 this year.
I think that's fair. I think, you know, people who follow me will probably be very upset with you to hear that. But I mean, I think the AFC West is going to be just as good, if not better, than it was last year.
I did too.
You know, I think some of these other teams that we're going to get to, you know, especially the Chargers, should be a little bit better. I don't think the Raiders are going to be any worse. I don't think the Chiefs are going to be any worse. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to win 9-10 games at least, I think, to even have a chance of making the playoffs. And that's going to be really, really tough. I mean, they still are playing a really tough schedule in their division. They still have to play the Patriots. I mean, they've got a lot of these tough games that it seems like every year they have a really, really difficult schedule. And the other thing about their schedule that's really tough is that it's very front-loaded with home games. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be on the road a lot in November and December. So they're not going to get that kind of, you know, home field, cold weather, altitude advantage late in the year. You know, they're you know, they need to start fast. If they don't start fast against San Diego, against Dallas, they got Oakland in week four. If they struggle in some of those early games, it could be really, really bad situation for them come November, December, when they're having to go on the road a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team where, you know, if they start 4-1, things are really promising. But if they're 2-3, even if they're 3-2 after those first five games, which are Chargers, Cowboys, Bills, Raiders, Giants, four of them at home, you know, it's going to be trouble given that they have three road games after that. And then they play the Patriots at home on November 12th. So definitely a weird slate there in a lot of ways. The team that topped the division last year, maybe not surprisingly, but a team that kind of prevailed in the end and who went through some interesting changes this offseason are the Kansas City Chiefs, who 12-4 last year outplayed their Pythagorean expectation, a 10.1 win team by Pythagorean expectation, and then kind of blew things up a bit. Cut Jeremy Maclin, cut Jamaal Charles, got rid of Dontari Poe, replaced him with Benny Logan, and then made that big trade to get Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback of the future in this year's draft. So it seems like the timeline is to have Mahomes play, you know, in the future, not really have him play this year, but do you think a team can really sort of be of two minds with that? Like in the locker room where you have a guy like Alex Smith who's good but maybe has a ceiling, and then you have this sort of promising backup behind him. Can they be successful and have Mahomes not really even get on the field this year?
I think so. And I think they've handled it correctly.
Yeah.
I think we've seen a lot of teams mess this up when they draft a guy in the first round. I think it helps that Alex Smith is so respected in that locker room. And mm-hmm. I think he gets a lot more credit inside that building than he does nationally, kind of an outside perspective on the type of quarterback he is. So I think, mm-hmm. I think the Chiefs have handled this well in kind of ramping down the speculation of when is this guy going to play. I mean, for a lot of camp, Mahomes was actually their number three quarterback. It looks like he's played his way to being the backup quarterback there, but you know, it's been good that they've been so adamant in saying, and not just saying, but everything that they've shown too. This is Alex Smith's team. Mm-hmm. It looks like the two of these guys have a really good relationship. You know, Alex Smith is helping Mahomes out. Mahomes is really kind of studying, really trying to be the mentee in the situation. Mm-hmm. But it is really interesting looking long term then, because you need this guy to get better. You want Patrick Mahomes to develop, but you also need to be fully in with Alex Smith for right now, because this is a team that has expectations that they're going to win this division and make a deeper run in the playoffs than they've made before. And mm-hmm. It is crazy because they've got a lot of, like you said, a lot of kind of interesting changes and questions offensively and defensively while they're trying to kind of keep this ship on the right track.
Yeah. I mean, they're a team that's really in transition in a lot of ways, even though they are pretty successful at the moment. And I guess, you know, if I'm a player on this team, if I'm a veteran on this team and I'm planning on winning a Super Bowl, I might be a little frustrated to think that instead of using our first round pick on a player who's going to help now, we're taking a player who's going to help us 2 years from now. But, you know, I also understand why the Chiefs did it.
Yeah. If you're Tom Bahali, or somebody like that.
if you're Tamba Ali, you're going on Twitter and announcing that Tamba Ali is talking, and then you're going to complain about not getting much playing time behind Justin Houston and Dee Ford. So it's been a really interesting offseason, like we said. And I think the biggest question mark here is going to be the passing game, which they haven't exactly been flush with wide receivers in years past, but they did bring Jeremy Maclin a couple of years ago, and it was, okay, well, he's going to be our solution. He's going to be our number one guy for the next few years. And 2 years later, he's gone, and he was injured last year, wasn't really his usual self. But the wide receiver corps is thin at best. I mean, it's Tyreek Hill is going to be the number one guy, and in terms of what Tyreek Hill did last year, he wasn't a number one receiver. He wasn't even really like a typical receiver. He was a guy who got a lot of screen passes and a lot of plays that were designed to kind of get him in space, and they didn't really use him the way that you would think of a typical team using, like, Demaryius Thomas, for example, as our number one wideout. It just wasn't the same sort of receiver. So he's going to have to play a much bigger role this year, and it's not necessarily clear that he's going to be up to it.
I mean, this is only his second year, too, in the NFL. I mean, they're putting a lot of eggs in the Tyreek Hill basket. I mean, he had 61 catches last year, which that's actually more than I was thinking he even had, but he only started one game. It wasn't like, he was running a lot of routes. He wasn't getting a lot of looks. I mean, they're putting a lot on this guy right now in terms of, you know, how many snaps he's going to play. Mm-hmm. He's not a big guy.
Not at all.
He's going to take a lot, you know, he's still going to be their punt returner. Mm-hmm. So how can he hold up physically? Is he kind of mentally ready, emotionally ready for all of the stuff that's going to come with being the number one wide receiver? I think those are all mm-hmm. legit questions that they have, and they're really counting on this Tyreek Hill experience working because, who else do they have? Chris Connolly, who, you know, he's probably a breakout player candidate because mm-hmm. they really don't have anybody else. They really need him to. But, I think from the passing game, the most important player in that is Travis Kelce, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he'll probably be their leading receiver, both in catches, yards, and touchdowns. I mean, I think those are probably fair to say that he's going to be their number one option, receiving option, even with Tyreek Hill playing the majority of the snaps.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Hill is interesting because I think he was targeted. He didn't play very frequently, but he was targeted when he was on the field more than anybody else in football, which is, again, a product of, it wasn't like he was running routes and getting open. He was catching a lot of passes where it was, he was coming on the field and he was being thrown a screen immediately and then coming off the field. So as a regular part of the offense, it'll be interesting to see if he's going to be able to run a full route tree, if he's going to be able to, you know, do more than just strictly rely on his speed. He's going to make plays because he has crazy speed and that's going to get him open. But, you know, Andy Reid's offense is not built around, you know, getting guys open downfield for huge gains. It's been an offense built around precise route runners and built around timing and around, you know, get guys who are effective in the intermediate range. And we don't know if that's going to be the case with Hill. It could work out, but there's very little to work with if it doesn't work out. And even if you're saying Travis Kelce is the number one guy, which I agree with you 100%, he led the league. He had twice as many yards as anyone else receiving last year. I would expect that to be the case if he stays healthy again this season. You know, even if Hill's the number two guy, if he's Devin Hester, if he's not a useful wide receiver, then, like you said, it's Chris Conley, it's Albert Wilson. There's very little behind them on the roster in terms of depth. And some of that's cap-related. Some of that is the decisions they've made over the past couple of years. But it's pretty risky for a team that, you know, had an offense that at its best was humming last year, that really worked very effectively. So I'd be concerned about that. I'd be concerned about Hill's responsibilities on offense taking away from his effectiveness maybe as a return man, given how good he was on returns last year. So it's really interesting. I mean, they have a good offensive line. They have a good core. The one thing to be concerned about maybe is Parker Erringer, their second-year guard, is out of left tackle with an injury. Brian Witzman, who's a Dallas pickup, has been playing there. But you'd figure a very good offensive line. Kelce has been healthy after the microfracture surgery as a rookie. That should help. And then, you know, the running game should be effective. It's not going to be one guy. It'll be the combo of Spencer Ware, Sharkhandrick West, and Kareem Hunt, who could be very exciting as a third-round pick. But you would figure they're going to be able to run the football if they have to.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Andy Reid's offenses have always done. But, yeah, I mean, they don't have Jamaal Charles anymore. This running back core is going to have to be effective because I don't think they can rely on the passing game week in and week out. It's going to be interesting to watch, and we're going to get to see him week one against the Patriots, who, you know, I don't know if I'd want to kind of be trotting that out for the first time against the Bill Belichick defense, who's had a while to be kind of planning for this and certainly doesn't want to get embarrassed on such a big national stage week one.
Mm-hmm. I will say the one thing that maybe holds up is that Andy Reid has that crazy streak where he's incredible after bye weeks, right? Where he's like 17-2, whatever, after a bye.
Yeah.
You would technically think the week one of the season would count as a bye, right? Like, you had time off just before the season, so maybe that'll help. I have no idea. I don't know if there's any actual meaningfulness to that, but I think they're going to be there in the long run. I don't think it's going to be terrible by any means. I'm intrigued to see how the defense plays, given how effective it was for chunks of last season. I think injuries are maybe the concern there. Derek Johnson has suffered another Achilles injury in December of last season against the Raiders. He's not going to be his usual self. Inside linebacker is going to be a concern for them. Justin Houston, someone who is perennially perhaps an injury concern. Chris Jones has been out for a chunk of the preseason. And in terms of the secondary, I mean, no one's going to doubt the talent there. Marcus Peters and Eric Berry are two of the best players in football at their respective positions. It's hard for me to imagine Eric Berry being any better than he was last season, or any more impactful, I should say, than he was a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a guy that, I mean, he's going to be impactful every game, but for the Chiefs to consistently win games, and I think to win that division, you're going to need more games, or he's having a game-winning interception return.
Yeah.
You know, remember, what was it against Atlanta last year? Against the Falcons. I mean, you need him to not just be a good safety, you need him to be making the game-changing type of plays. And I think he's the type of player who can do that consistently. And I mean, and that's what you like about Marcus Peters, too, is that he's always around the ball. He's not just getting pass breakups. He's actually getting interceptions. He's and he's playing well against the best receivers in football. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of pieces there to like. I think there's still, you know, maybe some questions about their pass rush. Like, where did D Ford go the second half of the year?
That's true.
Or especially down the stretch. I mean, he completely disappeared. So can he put together a full year? Is this Tamba Hali stuff, is it going to carry into the regular season? Are there going to be issues about his playing time? Is he going to, you know, be a bad teammate, or is he going to be raising issues with the coaching staff? I mean, mm-hmm. I just think those are some, you know, legit questions that are going to come up. And with Justin Houston, I just want to see if he can stay healthy, if he can play a whole season again. Because when he has, and when he's healthy, I mean, what, he was a half a sack away from the sack record in 2014 when he played a whole year. We just haven't seen that guy be able to be on the field for a consistent amount of time. So I think there are some questions there. And look, I don't think that the Chiefs are going to run away with this division. If the Chiefs are going to repeat, I think it's going to be a situation like we saw last year, where it's coming down to the last couple games in December. Where, you know, it's going to be these veteran guys that'll get them over that hump at the end. And I think they're the most veteran team in this division.
I think that's
true. So I think they'll still be there. But I think if there's any team that might take a step back, I think there's a chance that they could take a step back in terms of winning the division again.
Yeah. It's also not out of the question. They could be a wild card team or even miss the playoffs altogether in 2017. Yeah, Justin Houston, 22 sacks in 2014, last 16-game season. Over the two ensuing years, he's played 16 games total and has 11.5 sacks. So, you know, you wouldn't expect him to be a 20-sack guy if he stays healthy. Just no one's that good. But if he can play 14 games this year, I think that'd be an enormous upgrade for them versus, you know, some of the options they have elsewhere. As far as their pass rush goes, I have Chris Jones as the breakout player for this team, someone who I think was impressive in stretches last year as a defensive end. I think he's going to play a bigger role this year. Could be sort of an interior pass rusher. Is there a guy you think is going to break out for the Chiefs?
Well, I agree with you on Chris Jones, and he's also super impressive in a press conference. So,
really?
You know, I think the Chiefs media corps would love it if Chris Jones is a consistently impactful player as well. So they really need him to play big and replacing Ontari Poe. But you mentioned the guy that I'm kind of have my eye on right now, which is Kareem Hunt, the rookie running back who looks like he's moved really into that number two running back spot. I mean, Spencer Ware, Charkhandrick West were kind of a really nice duo that helped them survive when Jamal Charles was hurt over the last two seasons. Yeah. You know, Spencer Ware seems to have a pretty good hold on that starting job right now, but Kareem Hunt has been really impressive in the preseason. And I think what really jumped out in their second preseason game was how good he was in their pass game. Mm-hmm. And that's always such a question for rookie running backs, and especially in an Andy Reid offense. He can't just be a one-dimensional running back. You're going to need to be active in the passing game. You're really going to need to be a part of pass protection. And he's shown right now that he can do that. So if he can consistently do that, I would expect that he's going to be taking carries away from Spencer Ware pretty quickly.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction for their record this year?
Ooh, I would put them in the 9-win.
Interesting.
I think that's kind of, they're in that 9-win range. But it's good. They're going to have to work really hard to get there. I think they're going to be 9 really hard wins.
Yeah, I'm going to say 10 wins. I think, you know, at the 12-4 last year, I think they take a step backwards, maybe not as effective on defense, and the passing game is a little, you know, kind of takes some time to come together. But I do think that they will end up getting 10 wins, end up making the playoffs. I think they will not be the only playoff team in this division, but let's talk about who else will join them in the playoffs after the break. We'll have more of a Warnell show coming in a moment. First, guys, you know that it's contract season in the NFL. A lot of guys are getting extensions right before the season starts. Guys are going to be getting paid. And the most frustrating part of contracts is getting the language right. There's agents involved. There's all kinds of people getting in the way, making it an expensive process. And if you're dealing with contracts and you're dealing with legal documents in your life, one way to make it much easier and to take control of your family and your assets is by using LegalZoom. During National Make-A-Will Month, which is the month we are in right now. And sure, I mean, there's plenty of things to do. You want to go to the beach. You want to go on vacation. Something else you need to do over the summer is prepare for the future and make a will for you and your family. And even better, you can do that to get one for free by going to LegalZoom.com/prepare to get your free kit. You'll get a ton of helpful info, and you'll get discounts on LegalZoom's information. And they designed this kit to provide all the tools you need in one place. Whether a will or trust is right for you, you're going to get those special discounts. You'll get an estate plan checklist, an ebook, and other info to help you decide. And even better, if you need more help, that's not enough. You can get advice from the LegalZoom's network of attorneys available in all 50 states because LegalZoom is not a law firm. Forget what you've heard. They're not a law firm. They're just a very, very helpful website. So if you go to LegalZoom.com/prepare today, there's no obligation, just great resources to help you protect everything you care about during this month, National Make-A-Will Month. That's LegalZoom.com/prepare. Guys, you know how important it is if you're a football fan, how important it is for NFL teams and NFL players to be eating healthy. Of course, every team has food pretty much at all times waiting for players to be eaten. And it's not just, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs. It's fresh food. It's well-prepared food. It's healthy food to fuel players for games. You don't have that. You don't have a personal chef waiting for you at home. I wish I did, but I don't. The next best thing is Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And if you don't have a chef waiting for you, become a chef yourself. Blue Apron does an incredible job of supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs like you. And if you cook together, build strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. And even better, it's not just that it's healthy food, it's good food. Just on name alone, it sounds great. This week, we're talking about skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits, soy-glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans, garlic butter shrimp and corn with green bean salad and roasted purple tomatoes. This is not just NFL-quality stuff. It's stuff good enough for your home. And of course, it's affordable. There's a variety. It's flexible, so if you don't want a certain type of food, you're not going to be getting that. And every ingredient in your Blue Apron box arrives ready to cook, or Blue Apron will make it right. And there's a team of people dedicated to making it right, and they're brutal. So make sure it's good. That's what they're there for. Even better, if you check out this week's menu, you can get your first 3 meals free. Free shipping, free meals, $0.00 by going to blueapron.com/Barnwell. blueapron.com/Barnwell. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. blueapron.com/Barnwell. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined by USA Today's Lindsey Jones to talk about the AFC West. We previewed the Broncos and Chiefs before the break. Now let's get to a team that I feel like I'm always projecting to improve, I'm always saying nice things about, and then the same awful things keep happening. The Los Angeles Chargers. I'm always saying, hey, they were bad in close games last year. They got to improve. They were beat up on injuries last year. They got to be healthier. And then it keeps happening. Ugh, it's so frustrating. 1-8 in one-score games last year. And now it seems like their first two draft picks may be out for chunks of time. Second-round pick Forrest Lamp at guard is out for the year. And wide receiver Mike Williams has been out since the first day of camp. Why are the Chargers cursed?
That's a good question, right? Because it really seems like that's the case. And gosh, they're still getting so much buzz here, even this week, you know, mm-hmm. 3 weeks into training camp when they've had all of these issues with, you know, with injuries. They haven't looked very good in the preseason so far. There have been a lot of stories about how empty their stadium is, their yes. new stadium in Los Angeles, that there's kind of a lot of questions like that. They're still getting a lot of buzz as a team that's going to make this huge jump. Mm-hmm. And I think they should make some of a jump because the bad luck that they've had, it has to turn around at some point, right?
Yes.
I mean, it just has to, but I just haven't seen any evidence when you actually, you know, you get that feeling that things should change, but then when you yeah. actually watch it and you read what's going on there and you listen to what the coaches and the quarterback and everything are saying, it just doesn't feel like it's any different. So I am not fully on the Chargers are going to make this huge turnaround bandwagon yet, although mm-hmm. I could be convinced come Monday night of week one,
yes.
if they can show that this is a team that now has learned how to win those close games, maybe I can be convinced. But yeah, I think I need to see it happen more than they've seen so far in the preseason to jump on board with you on the bandwagon.
That's very fair. I think I need to see it too before I'm willing to jump on the bandwagon. I know that the moment I'm skeptical of the numbers is when they will start being good. So I think I have to reverse jinx them here and be like, I don't believe the numbers. They stink to get them to pull it off here. And it's, yeah, I mean, as much as we want to think, okay, well, if Jason Verrett's healthy, if Keenan Allen's healthy, there's a ton of talent on this roster and there's depth to support some injuries. But you just can't keep dealing with injuries on a week-after-week basis. I mean, I saw that last year where, you know, they were pretty effective early in the season, had some heartbreaking losses that really cost them games in the fourth quarter. And then by the end of the year, they just were beat up. They were exhausted, and they lost their final 5 games of the year. And one of those losses was to the Browns. So, you know, they were not playing especially effective football. So I think at this point, you know, it's not about saying, okay, they're going to be incredibly healthy. That's never going to happen. But if they can just be, you know, average or maybe a little worse than average when it comes to injuries, then I think there's a lot of promise for this football team to take a big leap forward.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great sign that for every situation that we talk about what sort of team the Chargers are going to be, we have an if in there. I mean, because it is with every single position group, basically, mm-hmm. if this guy stays healthy, if this guy improves, I think their best case scenario, their ceiling is really high,
yeah.
but so many things have to go right for them to get there. And especially with as good as the rest of this division is, all of those things have to go right. And back this summer, I was talking to Mike McCoy about the Chargers for a little while, and, he got fired by them, but he very much respects that roster that they have right there and really believes that this is a team that should be right in that playoff hunt. But yeah, I mean, it's just so many questions about if these things all go right. And what we've seen so far this preseason and the off season is that things are already starting to go wrong.
They're not going right. They're going horribly wrong.
No.
You brought up the stadium, which is so fascinating to me, because I don't know if we have any real comparison for it in the NFL, where they're moving to the Los Angeles Galaxy soccer stadium, which is about 32,000 seats, maybe. And they're having trouble filling it in and selling tickets. So do you think, just, as a fan, just as someone who's watched the league closely, do you think there is going to be a significant difference in terms of the home field advantage they're going to enjoy just by being in a stadium that's half empty and tiny? Or will it not make a difference once the games kind of get started?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there yet. I'm really looking forward to getting to a game there, hopefully sometime in September, because I just really want to see it. I've talked to some people who have been there, and they said it's a very interesting, kind of weird experience because it's so small. Sight lines are really weird. And so far in the preseason, they've only been putting about 21,000 people in that stadium and that has to feel really empty. I mean, most college, even small college stadiums are more full than that. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And I mean, look, you went to Chargers games over the last couple of years in San Diego in Qualcomm Stadium, and they didn't have a very good home field advantage there at all. I mean, especially if you went to a Raiders game there, I mean, it was at least half, if not three quarters, Raiders fans there. Denver games, it was very overwhelming Denver fans there. And I would expect that we're going to be seeing a lot of the same for Chargers games in LA right now. I mean, this is not going to be a huge, loud, true diehard Chargers fan base. I think it's going to be kind of a boutique NFL experience where, look, when the Broncos are there, I think it's going to be a lot of Broncos fans. When it's the Chiefs, I bet it's going to be a lot of Chiefs fans. So they're not going to have this dominant home field advantage, I don't think, that the rest of the league is experiencing. And, it's going to be really tough for them, I think, to win over this LA fan base. I don't think they're having the large, they don't have even what the Rams had.
Yeah.
When the Rams relocated last year, and the Rams had a hard time filling up their stadium. Granted, they're also now trying to fill up a 90,000 seat stadium. So it feels kind of empty when there's 65,000 fans there. But it's going to be a very interesting and probably, if you're the Chargers, frustrating home field experience.
Yeah, I mean, you figure Philip Rivers is used to having about 20,000 people in his house at any given moment. So to have that be an entire stadium full of people might be much. I mean, it's just frustrating because the numbers say one thing, and I think there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that says, hey, take a step backwards with the numbers. I think that if I was picking roster start to bottom and I had injuries off and I could pick where I wanted, I think the Chargers would be in the top 10. They have everything I'd want in terms of a great pass rush, a bunch of good receivers, a very good quarterback in Philip Rivers who, we know what he is at this point. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to probably cost them a game late in the fourth quarter, and we're all going to feel sick to our stomach based on what he did. But, he's also going to win them a game or two at the end of games, too. It's just that sort of conflict is so difficult to maneuver as someone who thinks with his head, and someone who's not a fan of the Chargers specifically. Is there a breakout player for the Chargers you might be looking at for this year?
I mean, Keenan Allen has been there since 2013.
Yeah.
Can we look at him as a breakout player? I mean, when he's been there that long, but I think when you look at the last 2 years that he's had, he has to have a breakout season this year.
Yeah.
I mean, can he have a new breakout season? Because, gosh, he had the lacerated kidney and then he hit an ACL. It's almost like he has to start over completely. So, I mean, he's really the guy that I'm really watching to see, is this going to go well for the Chargers this year? If Keenan Allen can be their solid number one wide receiver. If he can avoid the injury plague that he's had before and kind of freak injuries, then I think that's a sign that this is going to be the type of team that the public seems to be getting on board with, and that they believe that this they can be a playoff team. So I know he's not a new kind of guy, but he's really kind of the bellwether guy that I'm watching to see if he is healthy, if he is, you know, getting, you know, 100-yard receiving games, those sorts of things, then I think things are going to be trending the right way for the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who had, what, like 65 yards on the first half of week one last year before tearing his ACL. Like, it looked like he was on pace to have a monster season. And I'm not, I don't disagree. I mean, the guy I have is Jason Verrett, who's kind of the same person in a way at receiver, at cornerback, where made the Pro Bowl in 2015, but he missed 10 games as a rookie in 2014, missed two games in 2015, and then missed, you know, I think he came into last year with a partially torn ACL and then missed the final 12 games of 2016. So someone who's played at a high level just can't stay healthy. The only other guy I could think of might be Spencer Pulley, their center, who is competing for the starting job, and center has been a problem for them. Matt Slauson was going to start at center, but because of the forced lamp torn ACL, he moved to left guard, and now Max Turk, who might have been in the running, is suspended for the first four games of the season. So it's a big old mess there at center, and you would hope that it's going to be an opportunity for Pulley to kind of step up and make it his own, because if they, you know, if they fix the tackle situation, you'd hope they're going to be better on the interior, but if they, you know, plug a leak at tackle and then spring a new leak at center, it's not going to be much better.
And that's what's been their issue for years now, is that they're having to, you know, the dominoes keep falling on offensive line and they're moving guys over. I mean, I think a couple of years ago they played like 18 different centers.
Yes.
I might be off by one or two, but it was some, you know, crazy statistical anomaly of how many guys they actually had to play there.
Yeah. It's really remarkable what's happened there since Nick Hardwick left. The numbers say they should be better than this. I'm going to be conservative. I'm going to say they get to 8-8 this year, which would be, I think, a pretty reasonable season, given that they went 5-11 a year ago. They certainly have plenty of upside. They also have plenty of downside. I could believe anything from 4-12 to 11-5 in terms of their record. I think they have just a huge range, but I'm going to be conservative and say 8-8. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not quite as high on them as you are. I'm going to say 6-10 or 7-9.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where they're at. I think they've got some tough games on there. They got to play at the Cowboys, at the Patriots, at the Giants. I mean, they've got some tough games on their calendar where they've got to go on the road, and those are all in the second half of the season. So, I think if they could get to 7, that would kind of be maybe my ceiling for them. I know other people think it's going to be better than that, but we'll see.
We will see. The final team, I don't think anyone saw this team getting as high as they went last year, the Oakland Raiders, who I think a lot of people, even Raiders fans, said, oh, well, they're going to be better, a lot of young talent. They went 12-4. They were the best team in the league in close games. They were 8-1 in one-score games. Derek Carr made a lot of magical things happen, but they were the surprise team in the AFC. I'd say the Falcons were the surprise team in the NFC, but a team that was very effective out of nowhere. Do you think... I think most people think they're going to decline this year. Are you on that bandwagon? And how much do you think they're going to decline versus, you know, your typical 12-14?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that as a team they're going to be worse last year. I think they might actually be a better team. But yeah, when you look at the way they won games last year, some of those really crazy fourth quarter ways, you have to wonder, you know, can you keep winning that many close games? You know, crazy gambling Jack Del Rio going to continue this great streak? But it's so funny that we do them back to back with the Chargers, because they really were the anti-Chargers last year.
So
the way
ways
that they won games in the fourth quarter, the health of their offensive line, you know, they really had some good injury luck until it all fell apart at the end with Derek Carr's injury and Donald Penn's injury at the same time. So, you know, I think that as a team, they might actually be better.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're going to win 13 or 14 games. They might win 10 games or 11 games, just because, you know, just the luck factor, I think, that goes into some of these things. But I just was out in Napa for a couple of days watching them, you know, watched a lot of their offense recently, and there's tons of reasons to be optimistic about what they are going to be able to do offensively. You know, Derek Carr does not look like a guy who was, you know, carted off the field in December. Mm-hmm. He absolutely looks like he's right back on track. They've got Donald Penn back in camp. I think Marshawn Lynch, if he can stay healthy, if he can, they can somehow manage his workload to that he can, so that he can be effective all year long and not just early in the season, then, you know, I think this should be one of the best offenses in the NFL and better than the one that we saw last year even.
Yeah, I think Lynch is such a fascinating case because, you know, you can make arguments that he's going to be incredible and arguments that he's going to be a mess. I mean, on one side, you could say, okay, well, he was pretty bad his last year in Seattle. He was injured. He was never 100%. His production went way down. He's now a year out of football. He's going to be rusty. And he kind of comes from a different era in some ways, in that, like, he's not going to get those 300 carries or 295 carries he was getting during his peak in Seattle. So, you know, is he going to be the same guy if he gets 200 carries over the course of the season? Is he going to be able to get in the flow of the game? And then at the same time, it's like, well, he was good for a long time, and he has a year off to rest his body, and he was playing at the end behind a terrible offensive line in Seattle, and now he's playing behind maybe one of the three best lines in football. You would think he's going to be great. And I honestly, like, I could see both arguments. I don't know which one is right.
Yeah. No, it's totally true. And then he's also really invested. And that's not to say that he checked out in Seattle, because I don't think there's any anecdotal evidence that he had checked out at all. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the reasons of his decline were, like you mentioned, health, offensive line, kind of overall scheme changes maybe around him. Right. But he is super invested right now on what's going on in Oakland. And he wants to play. He wants to play well. He wants to play a lot. And, I mean, he was super impressive to watch him in training camp. I saw them in I'm sure it was a full 2.5 hours, if not longer. I think they did the exact max that they could do for a training camp practice. Mm-hmm. Full pads. It was a pretty hot day. And he was just flat out running dudes over in training camp. I mean, lowering his shoulder into Khalil Mack. I mean, getting into the secondary and running over their poor cornerbacks. I mean, it was impressive. You know, he only really has one speed. I mean, that's the same speed that we're going to see him playing with in games. And you don't really see that from most running backs in training camp during practices. So, you know, I think maybe I'm higher than on the higher side of what Marshawn Lynch can do and what he'll mean for this offense, because, you know, if he can be 75-80% of the guy that we saw in Seattle back in, you know, 2013, 2014, those years, I think that's a really great thing for the Raiders, because he just fits exactly the offensive mentality that they want to have. His offensive linemen just love him, love blocking for him. So I think, you know, I think it could be a really, really good thing that they've got going to really add on to what should be one of the best passing games in the NFL.
That's the thing, is like, you think, okay, well, Derek Carr took a big leap forward last year, and most quarterbacks will take a big leap forward. They tend to decline the year after, and he's not going to be maybe as incredible, you know, in those close games. He's not going to lead them to, I think it was 7 fourth quarter comeback wins last year, which was second, tied for the league record besides Matthew Stafford, who also set the league record with 8 last year. You know, he's maybe not going to be as effective late in games, but he was good everywhere. It's not like he was bad and then suddenly was great late in games. He was good all season and made the sort of improvements that, you know, maybe the interception rate hops up a little bit. He was at 1.1% last year, but everything else about his game is pretty sustainable. Unless the offensive line, you know, suffers a bunch of injuries, unless Amari Cooper gets hurt. Like, there's every reason to think that Derek Carr in this passing game is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a change at coordinator. Jack Del Rio made a decision last year that he wanted to promote Todd Downing, let Bill Musgrave go. You know, Todd Downing and Derek Carr have a really, really close relationship. Mm-hmm. They're friends. They're maybe more peers than I think a lot of times you see quarterback and offensive coordinator are. Mm-hmm. And it's really giving Carr a lot more freedom in the offense. So I think we're going to see him doing a lot more checks at the line. He's going to be audibling more. Mm-hmm. He's going to just have a lot more ownership of what's happening, I think, during every play. And he needs to do that. I mean, he got that huge contract this offseason, so that's the next kind of step in his evolution as a quarterback, is if he wants to be deserving of that quarter of that contract that he got, he needs to do those things that the very elite, that the guys that are always in the MVP conversation, that those guys do. And so far we've seen signs that he's capable of doing that. I think he's got the talent around him. I mean, there, you could put their wide receiver / tight end core with, you know, up against just about anybody else in the league, and it certainly rivals it. And yeah, so I, like I said, the luck thing might turn a little bit, but you know, from an overall depth of the offense standpoint, I mean, they should be really good. I think the reasons to maybe have some questions about just how good the Raiders are going to be if they can take that step and actually win the AFC West, I think most of those questions are on the defensive side.
I agree with you, but I also think the defense might be better than it was a year ago, just because, you know, they were a different team with Carl Joseph on the field last year. They were significantly better, and he's a guy who sat out the first, I think, three games of last year, at least the first two games of last year, and then they were, like, I think 25 points better in terms of QBR with him in the lineup versus him on the bench, and then he had an injury, I think, later on in the year that cost them a game or two. But they didn't have Mario Edwards for all last season. You know, those are guys who are going to be impactful players if they're healthy and on the field. So I honestly, you know, I think the defense is a concern. It wasn't very good last year, but even if they're 20, they were 22nd in DVOA. If they can improve to 16th or 17th, that might make up for the, you know, the offense not being quite as effective late in games.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've got the reigning defensive player of the year in Khalil Mack. So anytime you have one of the probably top three or four best defensive players in the league, that that really helps. I think my questions about them defensively are that the areas that they were weak last year, I don't know how much better they have gotten in those situations or in those spots. I think their secondary outside of Joseph, I think there's some really big concerns. I mean, they invested heavily in the draft there. It was clear that they knew they needed to get better there. They went out and used their first and second round pick on a cornerback, Gary Conley, and their second round pick on a safety, whose name I'm probably going to butcher. they just call him Obi because it's a lot. Obi Melifonwu?
That's how I would pronounce it. I'm going to say you're right.
So, they really like this guy Obi from UConn, but neither of these guys, Conley and Obi, neither of these guys have been able to pretty much do anything in the preseason. Conley's still on PUP. He's just started running recently. He's had shin issues. He had the off-field questions about him that lingered until the start of training camp, until that sexual assault case was dismissed. Neither of these guys have been able to contribute yet. And I think when they imagined back, you know, in April or May, when they pictured, okay, what's our starting secondary going to look like? Or at the very least, what are our sub packages going to look like?
Yeah.
They had Conley and Melifonwu playing big roles in both of those. And right now, neither of these guys are on the field. You know, I think Obi just got back to practice this week. He's been really struggling with an ankle injury. And then Sean Smith still hasn't figured it out. I mean, I remember reading a bunch of stories back in, I guess, you know, in June in minicamps that, okay, he's going to turn it around. He had a really disappointing 2016, but, you know, this year he's going to be healthy. His head is in it. Schematically, it's going to be better. And we haven't seen that happen at all this preseason. If anything, he's still not in the starting lineup. And then he has some off-field issues. He was arrested this summer, has some assault charges that he's facing. And that's troubling. I think that an area that you knew you had to get better at in the offseason, even the way you go out and try to address it, and right now we're here, you know, a week or two before the regular season, and it really doesn't look like, as a secondary, they're any better than they were last year.
I think it's fair to wonder about the defensive tackle spot, too, where they had a rotation last year, but they lost Stacey McGee to Washington. They released Dan Williams, who was their big free agent signing a couple years ago, and they're still pretty thin on there. Jihad Ward should be better this year in his second season. They are currently set to start third-round pick Eddie Vanderduz, which I keep calling him Eddie Vanderpump in my head, which is not fair to Eddie Vanderduz, but I keep doing it. But they're, you know, defensive tackle spot is a question mark, certainly. And so, you know, it's not crazy to imagine if they are losing late in the fourth quarter of games that teams may have some success running the football on this team.
Yeah. You look around the AFC West, too. They're going to be facing some pretty decent running games as well. And, those are certainly the questions. And while there are some really outstanding individual players on their defense, I think overall as a whole, those are some significant concerns. Because if you're not consistently stopping the run, especially in games, what is Khalil Mack going to be able to do? Like, he's superhuman, but is he that superhuman, you know?
I have to admit, I thought the defense was going to improve before I was talking to you, and now I feel like you talked me into them not being all that good this year.
I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be terrible, but I'm just saying that I don't think they've made the jump that maybe they were hoping that they were going to make. And look, once Conley gets healthy, and, you know, maybe that's going to make a big difference, but I just think that they're getting real close to the regular season starting here with still some significant questions.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Is there a breakout player on either side of the ball for you this season with the Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of going to go the route you went with the Broncos, where you looked at kind of a position group. But I think their tight ends are really underrated. I mean, we talk so much about their wide receivers with Crabtree and Cooper. But I think their tight end group is really interesting. They added Jared Cook this offseason. And I know Derek Carr really likes Clive Walford. I mean, he looks for this guy all the time in the red zone. And Jared Cook, you know, he really kind of, I think, underperformed when he was with the Rams, really kind of had a kind of a breakout season for a veteran with the Packers last year. And, you know, I can't stop watching his catch from Rodgers in the playoff game against the Cowboys. But you put those two guys and then Lee Smith, who, you know, I think everybody considers him to be a blocking tight end, but we're already seeing that Derek Carr is really looking for him in the red zone. And they weren't a tremendous red zone passing offense last year, just in terms of his passing efficiency. And that's one of the things that they're really looking to improve this year. And if they're going to, if they're going to do that, I think that the tight end group is going to be a really big part of that. So, you know, I'm looking at Cook and Walford, especially to kind of really have big impactful years for the Raiders in the red zone.
That makes sense. I'm on board with you there. I think I'm going to go with Mario Edwards, who missed almost the all of last season with an injury. I would expect that he's going to be maybe a bigger part of the defense this year, hopefully stay healthy, and then kind of give them maybe an interior presence next to Mr. Mack on the defensive line or up front when they're in their set packages. They are playing the third toughest schedule in all of football, and the numbers say they're going to decline. I think they will be a 10-6 team, which I think they will come up short in the division. I think they'll be a wild card team behind the Chiefs. I just think that even though they're going to improve in some ways, I think the defense is a valid concern, and I just think they're not going to be quite as lucky in those one-score games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right with you with 10 wins, although I think 10 wins could win them the AFC West. I just think that these teams are going to beat up on each other, and they're going they're going to fight out. So whoever is getting to 10 wins there at the end of December, I think we can now fact check me and go back through, but I think 10 wins is the highest I've said for any of these teams yet. So
yeah,
I think 10 and 11 is their range. They do have their three out of their last four games are on the road, and the home game that they have in December is against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Actually, they have two home games, Giants and Cowboys in December, but three of their last four on the road at Eagles and at Chargers to the end of the year. So I guess, like, you know, go back to what I just said, that Chargers game will probably be a home game in Los Angeles for them.
Yeah,
but
fair.
They still have to travel. But that, you know, Chiefs, Cowboys, Eagles from December 10th.
Their whole schedule.
Their schedule pretty rough.
After the bye week is terrifying. They had the bye week in week 10, then they have three home games, but it's Patriots, Broncos, Giants, and then, like you said, at Chiefs, hosting Cowboys, at Eagles, at Chargers to end the season. So, you know, this could be a thing where it's going to be more about can they stay healthy and have everyone on board for that. Really terrifying.
Yeah, and then three of their first four are on the road as well. I mean, they start that way on the road and they end that way on the road. I mean, we're going to learn a lot about them week one against the Titans, who are such a sexy pick to kind of be an AFC playoff team. And then that week four game at Denver. So we're going to learn a lot about this division right away, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I still think it's going to be competitive all the way up till, you know, week 17, but we're going to learn a lot where some of these teams stand in September, which I don't think you can say about a lot of the other divisions.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really fascinating. Out of division, I could see any of the four teams winning, which is not the case for a good chunk of the NFL at this point. So I think it's the most interesting division in all of football. So very happy we had you on to help us preview it. Where can people check out more of what you are working on?
All over usatoday.com, and you can follow me on Twitter. It's by Lindsay H. Jones on Twitter.
Is there a by Lindsay Jones on Twitter?
I don't know if there is. There is a Lindsay Jones. And you'd be surprised how many times people tweet at Lindsay Lohan or tweet at me when they're trying to tweet at Lindsay Lohan, which is
so
crazy.
Really, any Lindsays people need to get in contact with, they can just contact you and you'll direct them to the appropriate Lindsay.
Yes. Yes. I just wanted to keep it exactly like my byline is, which is why the H is in there. But yeah, if you're looking for just Lindsay Jones, you're going to be at the wrong person, unfortunately.
Lindsay, thank you so much. I'll be back on during the season to talk more about the NFL in general.
Thanks, Bill. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks to Lindsay Jones for hopping on the show today. We have one more division preview on the way later this week. You can probably guess which division it is because we've done seven of them already, but it'll be the AFC East. I'll spoil it for you coming up later this week. Thanks so much for listening, and more Bill Barnwell Show coming later on this week.